The last stretch of the show this evening takes us to Cape Town, where I have with me, or in front of me, a press statement that was issued just 2 days ago by the Imam Abdullah Haroon Foundation. And the Haroon family, that is the family, the children and grandchildren of Imam Abdullah Haroon, have decided on the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Imam Abdullah Haroon to set up the Imam Abdullah Haroon Foundation 50th Commemoration Committee. And it is a family initiative, but it's also bringing on board individuals who are related to the Imam by family ties, congregational bonds, and ideology. And some of the objectives that have been set by the foundation at this particular time is to commemorate and memorialize the Imam's martyrdom, which occurred, as we will hear, at the hands of the apartheid regime security branch on the 27th of September 1969. So that's one. Also to share information about the Imam's life and many others such as him. And there will also be an effort to reopen the inquest into the death of the late Imam. Let's find out more about the objectives and the move that has been taken at this particular time as we speak to Kasim Khan. Kasim Khan is the coordinator of the Imam Haroon Foundation, joining us online from Cape Town this evening. Kasim, great to speak to you once again. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
This would be an unfortunate question to start off with. I think, you know, the life of Imam Abdullah Haroon should be in all our school textbooks, our madrasa textbooks. It should be a name that, you know, is uppermost and somebody that we aspire towards, somebody that we memorialize, and we memorialize his ideals or live up to his ideals on a regular basis within the community. But for somebody out there who did not hear about Imam Abdullah Haroon, in a nutshell, what should we know about him?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It's very important for us to first and foremostly note that Imam Abdullah Haroon was the Imam for 15 years of the Al Jamia Masjid in Stephman Road in Claremont. So he was a person based at the Masjid. He served the community. He studied in Makkah, Al-Mukarramah. He studied under Sheikh Al-Alawi. And then when he was forced, because of World War II, to return to South Africa, he then studied under Sheikh Ismail Bihadin in South Africa. So certainly a scholar, somebody that was well-trained. But most importantly, he served a particular community in Cape Town as an imam, first and foremostly. The second thing about Imam Abdullah Haroon that is really important for us to know is that he reached out to everybody within his within the Muslim community. And, you know, our Muslim community normally have people with various interests, backgrounds, things like that. And then he had reached out to the broader Cape Town and South African community in being able to communicate the message of Islam. So, for example, in our immediate townships in Cape Town here, such as Langa, Gugulethu, and Nyanga, he was extremely well-known, and he had the title of Umfundisi, meaning in the Isikosa language, it means the priest has come, you know. So many young people who are now much older can tell you that they have met and seen Umfundisi. So one was an imam, two was somebody reached out to people from everybody within the Muslim community and outside of it, and three was very much and actively involved in da'wah activity. The fourth and most important one that probably got him got the anger of the apartheid government was that he pointed out and created awareness of and agitated against the unjust laws that the apartheid government had introduced. Now, these were the days in which laws such as the Group Areas Act was very fresh in people's mind. Imam himself was forced out of Claremont area, which then became a predominantly white area. Imam spoke out, particularly after the Sharpeville massacre of 1960. He then was actively involved in supporting the families of people who were detained. Remember, this was a period when the organizations such as the African National Congress and the Pan-Africanist Congress were banned. And what he did was, when family members were left destitute of these detainees, he, with Canon Collins and the League, the Defense and Aid Fund would reach out to families and make sure that they have their basic needs met. Lastly, he was also very well known for having sent students abroad, both for studies and for military training.
And obviously the culmination of all of that was his tragic assassination, Qasim.
Yes, and also one of the things that is very important for us to know about Imam, and now I'm going to move back to what who is Imam. When he left his studies in Medina, in Makkah, you know, when students leave a Darul Uloom or a university or whatever, the teachers always ask them, so what will you do for the sake of Islam? And he said, you know, the other students were saying, no, we will build a masjid, we will start a madrasa. And he said, I come from a very poor family, so one of the things I will do is I will uphold one important sunnah of Rasulullah. And this sunnah was the sunnah of fasting Mondays and Thursdays. And this is a sunnah that he continued until his dying day. And I will give you evidence now about this. Firstly, everybody who knew Imam Abdullah Harun, especially shopkeepers to whom whose shop he used to go, he used to work for a company called Wilson Roundtree. And you know, for the older people there, the company used to make Mint Imperial sweets.
Yes.
And so they know if Imam came to the shop on a Monday and on a Thursday, not to offer Imam anything to eat or drink or whatever. But one of the things that Imam did is that because he was so diligent in looking after the affairs of the detainees, of people who were in prison, the security police set somebody up, sent him to the house, you know, because remember, this was supposed to be illegal activity. They arrested Imam as this person left the house where he supposedly went to ask for assistance. They arrested Imam on the 28th of May, and they arrested him on the day which was also the day of Maulud of Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. They held Imam for 123 days, and during this period, for those people that from the police and from the food that supposedly was supposed to be given to him, there was evidence that in the entire period that he was kept away from his family, Imam was fasting. Okay? During this period he was fasting, he was beaten, tortured continuously during this period whilst he was fasting. Okay? And he met his death on the 27th of September. On that, an inquest followed after that, and then the state said he tripped down stairs, and that is how he was killed. Okay? When you go to the police station where he was kept for most of the time, there are hardly stairs anywhere to be seen. So we knew that this is a lie. But we are honored by the fact that we know that the Imam left this dunya probably in a state of fasting. And so this was a deeply spiritual person, and this was a person deeply concerned about what is happening to his people, and particularly also being a good example and leading a good sunnah, upholding a good sunnah as he went from this dunya, inshallah.
Qasim, that was certainly something that I was not aware of, and you know, just increases the admiration of the late Imam Abdullah Harun in all our eyes. I must speak about an experience while I was still a teenager. Had the opportunity, with obviously not realizing the full gravity of the story, but reading the copy that perhaps was obtained while it was still banned of the killing of the Imam, which I understand was published in 1978 outside South Africa, the authors there being Pani Desai and Cardiff Mani, and it was obviously censored in South Africa, not allowed to be disseminated. But, an amazing story, and the fact that the story was written so soon after he had passed away. And my point about this is, the story is out there, more information has become available, documentaries have been made. But despite all of these efforts, would you, without obviously trivializing the efforts of the family and those close to him. Would you say that the story hasn't gone where it should have? The quest for justice for his killing shouldn't be where it is so many years after the onset of democracy?
Absolutely. And this is the reason why we held a press conference on this Friday, the 8th that passed, which was the day he was born. And we basically joined the families of Ahmad Timur, of Ayman Khwate, of Fort Kalata, of Steve Biko. And we said that, you know what, not only did the family of Imam Abdullah Harun not get the true picture of what had happened, we don't know exactly what had happened, and neither, but we are absolutely sure that the state's version of what was given was definitely a lie. And what we are saying is that that inquest that was held around 1970 for Imam Abdullah Harun did not reveal the truth, and we are asking, as the other families are also asking, that these inquests must be reopened. Now, we believe that the democratic government, which came into power in 1994, was committed to do this, but sat on their hands. And 25 years later, our democratic government, right, which came into being because of the blood and sweat and death and martyrdom of these great people, has not acted on this matter. And they have not acted decisively. In fact, on the contrary, it looks like there has been several attempts that has been made to not reopen many of these efforts. And we as families are joining hands, and we are asking our people everywhere that they demand from the state that these inquests be reopened, because we need to know the truth. And if we try and cover up the truth, it will also reveal itself in the way we are managing our society, our democratic society going forward. We want that foundation to be established properly. We want to make sure that we start our new society and building our new nation going forward, built on truth and not on the cover-up of lies.
From the cases such as that of Ahmad Timur, which has, alhamdulillah, gotten a lot of media coverage, it has gone to the courts, it's set important precedents, we still find from that after going through this entire process, people like his nephew being determined at the process and, you know, winning important dividends in the case. But even after it goes through all of that, when it comes to prosecution, when it comes to delays, there are a lot of frustration. So it's almost as if in these cases you're battling against the state in terms of its inertia. You're battling against the red tape and the bureaucracy. You're battling against people who want such stories to be buried forever. And you're also battling against time, because many of the people who perhaps would have to be prosecuted are now passing away, or people who need to testify are not in a position to testify, etc. So there's a kind of urgency to prosecute all of this. Now, what I when I see all of these cases, you see Imam Abdullah Harun's case, there's many other names that you've listed in your press release, people who have similar cases in a similar scenario who potentially want to also open their inquest. Is there a way of collectivizing all of this?
Certainly what we are pressing for as families together, and we are asking other family members to come forward, is that there is a collective pressure that all of us can put on the state. Understand? So remember, many of these things is not a one shoe fits all. And you understand? Some people, for example, it's just in the manner in which they died needs a particular type of reinvestigation. Okay? Mm-hmm. So you can't say, well, close to 150 people were killed, now you need to just lump them all together and just, no, every case needs to be reopened. But what we need to do first is the state needs to acknowledge very openly, and we were asking of the president himself, especially in the Sona that passed, in which he was reminding us to watch the space every time, we were saying, please, Mr. President, we asked him first to invite the family of these seven, at least, who were having 50th commemoration this year. We had no response. The former TRC commissioners had asked that he had even give an apology for not acting. That was also not done. And so what we are wanting initially is first for the state and President Ramaphosa himself to come out and speak to these families and say, even if it takes us a few years, but we are not going to drop this one. We are going to put resources to investigate and to look at every case, but we recognize all of these cases. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's no word coming from these things. In fact, there has been a request that there be an inquiry into why the MPA has not acted for the last 25 years. The MPA officials are now saying there was political interference preventing us from doing this. And we are saying if there was political interference, then there was you who could have blown the whistle on this. So you are not doing your work as MPA official, while you are also now complicit positive on your hands. So we are not backing down on this one. We are also asking in a very determined way. And we still have a great amount of trust in our democratic government that they will do the right thing. And we ask them continuously, do the right thing. Recognize that these people were killed, that they were lies and cover-ups, and make this matter right. So we are saying back to Mr. Ramaphosa or President Ramaphosa, watch this space as you see these families continuously mobilize and get people in the public and through our voices in public to say that we will not go down quietly.
And certainly we wish you all the success and all the information that will be released. I guess there'll be many public events. We'd be glad to share that information with the public. Important part of reliving moments from the apartheid, keeping our young generations in tune with the sacrifices that were made, and also reliving those ideals.
If I can just make two small requests on this one.
Yes, please.
Yeah, so one, I heard the discussion was from our brother Zafar Ahmad from Al Falah School earlier about the tablets and all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we want to encourage, particularly for our Muslim schools, right? And we have reached out to people like him and others from the Association of Muslim Schools. So I hope, inshallah, that there are principals and teachers that are listening, that we've got quite a bit of information where you as independent schools can start integrating this information about people like Imam Abdullah Harun into the schools, and we are ready to assist you in helping in packaging all of that information. Okay?
Right.
The second point I want to say is the date of the 28th of May until the 27th of September is 123 days. So for our people who like to tweet and use Twitter, we have created a Twitter handle called hashtag 123 days. Okay?
Yes.
Now, that 123, we are also asking particularly people at our Quran schools, okay, but the public generally, we are asking for the ajr and for the sawab of Imam Abdullah Harun, that people dedicate the khatams, and we are asking if your school decides we are going to do 123 khatam for Imam Abdullah Harun, that we request that you make contact with us, because we are not expecting everybody to make political statements,
yes,
to do things legally, to do things on the sports field and in the education settings. But if you run a Quran school in particular,
mm-hmm,
we ask your Quran school, 123 students, make 123 khatams, let us know, let us come out to recognize your efforts, add all of the khatams up, because with our dua, with our recital of Quran, we are also saying, as is Intiaz is saying, with your dua, this is when we see success. Many times, Intiaz Qazi has told me that there were many things that he had difficulties but he knew that with dua and the dua of many of the people, particularly who listen to him, that is when success comes.
Mm-hmm.
So we want your dua, we want you to make recite these khatams, and we want our Muslim schools to be involved with us, inshallah.
Inshallah. I'll have to leave it there, unfortunately, Qasim. We're out of time, but very meaningful initiatives on a variety of levels, whether it's educational, political, spiritual, and I think I like the comprehensive nature of all these interventions. all of that, as we've been discussing, is in anniversary or at the 50th anniversary of the martyrdom of Imam Abdullah Harun. And certainly, as Qasim has said, this is a space to watch. Watch the space, to quote our president. Shukran for your time, Qasim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Coordinator of the Imam Harun Foundation, Qasim Khan, speaking to us tonight about the activities and the reopening, or the quest to reopen the inquest into the death of Imam Abdullah Harun. We run out of time. Till we meet again, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Meet you next week, same place, same time, on Under the Radar.